Let's roll. This is Countercharge, your podcast for ranks, flanks, and kings of war. Join your hosts as they delve into the world of Panathar and bring you worldwide coverage of all things Kings of War.
Welcome to Countercharge. I'm Justin Robbins, best player in logs.
And I'm Rafinoff, and we're back again for another List Builder Studio, and this time we got Justin Robbins. I know we've been talking about this for a while.
Yeah.
It's probably because you finished second this year, and I'm like, you know, we probably need to get him on to spill some of the beans. Because especially now, with Clash of Kings and everybody saying ogres are terrible. Bro, they're not terrible. Okay, your siege breakers are speed 5, but they're 5 points less.
Yeah.
You know, I like 17, 19, hunters, defense 5, warriors.
Same.
Let's kick it off with Justin. You know, where are you from?
I grew up in Texas. Gosh. In high school, I started playing Warhammer Fantasy in like the Dallas-Fort Worth area. Now we live in Austin. We got a pretty healthy group in Austin. I don't play locally a ton. I primarily play in Texas GTs. There's enough of them to keep me going. I've got a couple guys I will pick up games with. So.
And how long have you been playing Kings of War?
You know, I think I actually met you at my first tournament.
Was that Lone Wolf?
Lone Wolf 2022 was my first ever.
Yeah, it's just a couple of years ago, man. And here you are kicking ass, taking names, and embarrassing people. Showing Jesse how it should be done.
I think he beats me every time we play. But somehow at Masters, he wins Texas GTs, and then we play at Masters and struggles.
It's funny because I always say that Texas is like its own thing, you know, with the goofy scenarios and just, you know, I'll go to Lone Wolf and finish 5th. I did that one time and I was like, oh, I'm amazing. And then like, I can't replicate that anywhere else.
Yeah. And you know, we also like most of our attorneys have player placed terrain. So it really hurts shooting armies. And it's really like, if you know how to place terrain, it's one of the reasons Jesse is so good in Texas. He was playing the best that had like no shooting mitigation. And he just put terrain where he wanted it. It is its own little meta.
I know you play ogres, but what other armies have you played?
Competitively, only ogres. I've been tinkering around with halflings since they dropped in probably 22.
Yeah, it's been a couple of years.
And initially just could not figure them out. And still, I'm having a hard time, I think, breaking my ogre play style a little bit. I'm 2.5 years deep with ogres, 2 masters, probably 10 Texas GTs, and they've really been my bread and butter. I think I used to feel bad because the guys I play with change armies all the time. Jesse doesn't as much. One of the guys we play with changes armies all the time. And I always kind of felt like I needed to play different armies. And I'm just going to say, like, I don't get a lot of time to play. I got little kids. I've got a very busy job. And playing one army is enough for me. And I love it. And it's working out. I mean, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, and ogres are a good army for scenario play, right? Like, they have all the tools. The only time I feel like I'm ever competitive is when I'm playing ogres. I mean, because you've got all the extra unit strength, and it's very mobile. And I'm really looking forward to seeing the changes, because I'm not quite as doom and gloom as some of the folks out there. I'm going to say this now. They might be better. Now that you've got the ability to have Brutal 3, essentially, if you take the Mammoth, add in Kuzlo, and you got the Rally 2.
I mean, it hurts. Like, my list was set for years, and it's essentially they've slowly bumped up the cost of everything over the last couple of years. Like,
yeah, Siegebreakers and Nom Nom have just slowly increased up and up and up.
Warlocks went up 5 points. Siegebreakers went up a little bit. Nom went up a little bit. And so I've adjusted my list. Man, I loved my master's list. It was 3 Siegebreakers. I went down to 2 regiments of warriors, 3 warlocks, Nom. All the warlocks had drain life, and I had 2 giants and a bully. And it was, I felt like I really could roll with it.
People sleep on the giants.
They sleep on them.
They got a lot of nerve. Normally going to go Slayer, but maybe if you got multiple giants, you have one with Rampage. Is that what you do? You have one with Rampage and one with Slayer, or you double Slayer?
I go both Slayer on the 2 giant list, but I just went to Alamo GT like 2 weeks ago and got second and had 3. 3 giants, 2 with Slayer and 1 with Rampage. It's a 2,500 point
tournament. I'll say it again. You know, I think ogres are going to win Masters next year. That's my prediction. And I think it's going to shock some people because ultimately, even the list, the proto-listicle, like the Shulkin build that everybody talks about, like,
yeah,
it still functions. Your 15 points that you saved on the three Siegebreaker hordes, now you can pay for this sergeant upgrade. I mean, I guess the only negative is you don't have the Siegebreakers powering up the warlocks, but you have enough other stuff to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, we should mention at this year's Masters, you came in second. And you came in, was it third the year before or second the year before?
No. It was like probably 15th the year before.
You've been moving up.
Yeah.
You're going in the opposite direction of Jesse.
That poor guy. Yeah. Yeah. It.
Sometimes you take a knife to a gunfight.
And I think most of Texas and Omaha took knives to gunfights. And it's like just got shot off the board because terrain was pretty small. I didn't have a huge problem with it. I don't think I played into a lot of shooting. I had stealth. Yeah, I think I've been 5-1 both Masters, and I crept up to second place this year. It was surreal.
Who'd you lose to this year?
Well, I lost my first game.
Was it against Greg Person?
Against Greg Person.
Greg's a good player.
I clocked out. He had two full turns left. So Masters was in September. I hadn't played since the previous November, and I played three pickup games before Masters just to like knock some rust off. And I'll say, I mean, we talk about playing the same army for a long time. Like, I know Ogre's in and out. So it was easy for me to pick it up even after an 11-month break or 10-month break and jump right back into it.
You could have lost to a lot worse people. Greg's a really great guy.
It was fun.
If you're going to lose a game, lose the first one, right?
You know, it sure worked out.
Well, Justin, are you ready to go into the List Builder Studio?
Let's go, Rob.
The List Builder Studio.
All right. Well, first up, give us a sense of what draws you to an army. You know, is it the way an army plays? Is it the models? Is it like a perceived weakness? Or is it like in your local scene, you don't want to play the same army everybody's playing? I mean, just when you're thinking about a new army,
yeah,
what takes you there?
I really like synergy a lot. Ogres have a lot of it. Halflings have been a huge draw to me because they've got a lot of synergy. I think some of the best things they've done in Kings in the most recent years has been like Northern Alliance, the synergies they've introduced in Northern Alliance with Frozen and Tundra Fighters. Like, oh, I love it. And then Halflings are built on it. I mean, everything in Halflings is like this. Halflings is almost like a Rube Goldberg device a little bit. But yeah, I think army synergy and things that work together. And then I've also realized it's taken me a couple of years to realize I really like counter armies, like kind of counterpunch armies, where I'm responding to my opponents. I think Halflings is that kind of army. They're just not as durable as Ogres are. So with Ogres, I can do it with a lot of forgiveness. I can counterpunch with a lot of forgiveness. And force opponents into bad places.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, that's the thing we always ask is, you know, are you trying to ask your opponent questions or are you trying to, you know, take questions and answer their questions? And counterpunching army can be a little bit reactive, but in a way, if you position correctly, you sort of are asking a question. You're like, here's what I'm presenting for you. You have to decide. And if you make the wrong choice, I'm going to hammer you.
Yes. That's my favorite way to play is asking my opponents questions during the game. With how I deploy and how I play and my positioning and forcing them to overcommit. Those are my favorite games. When I force my opponent to overcommit and they finally do.
I'm going to guess here that you are a pretty much a play style guy when you're building a list, right? Like you have a thing in mind. This is the way I want the list to play or.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think so. I think so. Playing one list or one army for a long time. I think, you know, I think about battle groups. And I think when I'm playing, I try to play in a way that I ask people questions. Let my list be strong, but really, I'm a big proponent of the way I play asking people questions that they have to answer. So in deployment or forcing people to overextend, things like that.
Play the whole table. That's always a difficult thing for a lot of people, especially if they have an elite army and you're yeah. showing them, you know, 60 inches or something of table. It's like, oh, what do I do? I mean, I'm going to get overwhelmed here.
Or even like with my two giant list, I would take hard flanks with both the giants and a bully. So I had two giants and a bully hanging out on a flank and they'd run up 14 inches and cover half the board turn one. And that's a big question people have to answer. How are we going to answer two giants and a bully? So I think about that a lot. Like I usually have a truly main battle group and then like a really small one, kind of can, I can choose a flank or they can integrate pretty easily.
Do you use like combat groups? Like some people call it like where they've got their army subdivided into small little distinct armies, if you will, that can function independently, maybe with their own source of, I mean, do you do that consciously or is it more of a loose affiliation?
I'm a loose affiliation. And honestly, when I'm list building it, I'm not the best, like, crack a book open and figure out what's broken kind of person. I tend to think how it's going to play. And then I develop the play style for a list as I get some reps with it. And so, yeah, I tend to have pretty loose affiliations. I think with ogres, it's like I've gotten to the point where I have, when I was playing with two warrior regiments, it was two warrior regiments and a horde of siege breakers in a little warlock bundle, wherever I wanted them, kind of centered of the board. And then I decide where I was going to deploy the rest of my army. Yeah, so I've got some small, I think, based on synergies. And I say, you know, I said I like to play lists with synergies built in. Based on the synergies, I think battle groups exist. And that's my approach to kind of the battle group mentality is what auras exist, what buffs exist within those units. Talking about ogres, the rally two sergeant or rally one base sergeant, but that command order
with the rally one command. Yeah. It's phenomenal. Talk to me about how you think about the meta though. Cause I mean, when you're playing an army and you're trying to be competitive, I'm assuming you're conscious of what you're possibly going to face. Right. And you may be either trying to lean into what maybe you're leaning into a play style that's going to work well against those archetypes, like shooting alpha strike, whatever, but just talk to me about how meta impacts your list building process.
I want to talk about ogres a little bit more. They do two things really well. They've got stealth built into a unit that can cover, if you're packed up, they can cover a lot of the army. So that is a huge mitigator for shooting. And then the other thing is really how do I crack defense 6? Those are the two main things I think about. I don't plan a lot for Alpha Strike. I typically play for Alpha Strike. I play into Alpha Strike more than I list build for Alpha Strike. And I'll say, I don't know that there's a lot of Alpha Strike in Texas. There's a handful of people that play Alpha Strike.
Yeah, a few Green Lady guys probably.
Yeah. And I've gotten good at positioning. I think you can counter Alpha Strike a lot with really good positioning. And so I've learned to position units where flyers just can't get to me, like just can't complete a charge. I think there's a lot you can do from an Alpha Strike perspective. I think there's a lot you can do with Alpha Strike. People, in my opinion, get a little impatient. I always watch them and wonder if I would have made that charge or if I would have waited another turn.
That's why I can't play the army because I have no patience. It's like, yeah. I always spring the trap too early and then I'm like, oh crap. A good Alpha Strike player will set you up and will wait for just that perfect right time where when they hit you, the percentages are in their favor and they're going to knock you out.
I think a lot of this game comes down to patience when you're playing. It's like, are you patient enough to wait for the right decisions? Or are you going to try to push? There's certain times when you have to push. You have to be the one that's willing to say, hey, I'll take this 60-40 in my favor. Those 60-40s are not what I like to take a lot of times. I like to take like 75-25s if I'm really going to go in and know that I'm going to land in a good spot. Yeah, and then we talk about shooting. I think learning to play with terrain helps a lot, but shooting's tough. The ogre list, thinking about tonight, the ogre list I wrote doesn't have the stealth bubble, but it's got rally two. So I'm like, I think I can get up there.
And if you got 24 drain life, it'll be fine.
Yeah. And then, I think that we talk about defense 6 man with dwarves. That was my last game at the most recent GT. And giants help a lot with that. They really do. Crush 2 siege breakers help a lot with that. As I'm looking forward to a list that may not have siege breakers in it for 2025, that is the biggest question for me is how am I going to handle dwarves?
If it means you're taking less siege breakers, you have less crushing strength in the list and you need alternatives, right? Whether it's giants or you're going to have to lean on Nom Nom's Bane Chant. Mm-hmm. Maybe you need to throw a loot on one of your other sergeants or your bullies or something.
But you know what? When you are looking at Brutal 3 or two Brutal two wherever you want it. I was doing the math earlier today and looking at the at Brutal three, and it's the exact same as having Crush two.
If you're at Brutal two or Brutal three, that's like 6 or 9 extra attacks, which theoretically is probably going to be okay. And God forbid you were ballsy enough to bring Kuzlo as well and have 4 on the dice. I mean,
my very first list that I ran at the first Lone Wolf I went to in 22 had the Mammoth and Kuzlo. And I was 3-1-1. My loss being to Dustin Howard in round 5. So honestly, I think there might be something there, especially with the extra Brutal and the command dice, the command order.
Do you use Universal Battle at all when you're building lists or testing out lists?
I use UB a lot. Like I said, I don't play a lot during the week. I primarily play at tournaments. So when I'm list building, I'll usually play UB with some buddies. When we're gearing up a couple months before a tournament, trying to nail down lists, we'll play a couple rounds of UB or some. I mean, there's been times we've played. Well, sometimes we'll play 5 times a week. It's been a while since I've done that. I love UB. I'm a huge proponent. I know some people can't stand it. I think the biggest proponent of UB the biggest benefit for me for UB was learning angles. Mm-hmm. Like really learning angles, like denying angles, understanding how to set my units up for future angles. Like UB is where I learn.
Talk to me about how you add flexibility to your list to be able to, you know, give yourself additional tools that you might need during a game.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm a big proponent of flexibility. We talk about Mogar Army, like, yeah, I've got everything. I've got 25 Lightning Bolt early in the game. I've got my Master's List had 24 Drain Life mid to late game, healing Bane Chant. I'm a pretty big proponent of mixed arms. I think being able to answer different questions at different times is a necessity in this game because you really just don't know. You don't know what you're going to face. And so as I've looked at different armies to play, you know, will I change armies? What do I play next? I've thought about EOD. And one of the biggest things I've thought about is, man, what am I going to do without healing? What am I going to do without drain life, readily accessible, being able to top off a Siegebreaker unit that's got 6 wounds on it and be like, thanks for charging. Like, I'm okay if we sit here because I'm going to just top myself off and we're just going to sit here and grind. And then, you know, early, I think from a plink, I really appreciate plink damage. I look at what game 3 of Masters, I did like 2 wounds to Scud and rolled a double 6 and wavered him and he sat and it delayed him a turn. I think plink damage, if you're removing small pieces or if you're targeting for the first 2 or 3 turns and trying to remove a big piece, having some shooting is really helpful. It's also really helpful late game when you're trying to clean up units that can score. If you got, you know, look at ogre characters. They're going to be running around late game scoring points. Mid to late game, they're moving to objective markers. You need to be able to reach out and touch them. And mixed arms is the way to go.
Yeah. Talk to me about when you're building a list, how you think about a unit's role. Like, are you thinking about, okay, this unit can do multiple things? And ogres may be a bad example because they don't have Sea Guard that can actually be a defensive phalanx unit or a shooting unit. But I mean, are you conscious of like, all right, how I'm going to offensively and defensively use these things or different ways you can use the same unit?
I think about that for sure. People can say ogres are fast, right? Defense 6 is not fast. So sometimes you'll get the alpha, sometimes you won't. I have, I would say oftentimes you won't. And so I from a defensive perspective, offensive output, I think it's pretty straightforward, right? Like you look at offensive output, Can it defeat a defense 5, 15, 17 large infantry horde in the front in one turn? Or can it get close with a Bane Chant? That's kind of the offensive output is, you know, if I go into the front of the defense 5, 15, 17 unit, what will it look like? And then I think defensively, it is how much can I stand, right? You're answering that question. I think the other side of defensive is I'm gonna toss it back up to play style as I'm looking at halflings and looking at Pathfinder forest troll gunners, defense four. But we're sitting in a, I want to sit in a forest. I want to sit in a forest and require you to come to me. And so how you play the game from a, if you're slower or if you're weaker defense, how you're playing the game with terrain and deploying in terrain, those also ask questions.
How do you consider the number of drops in your list?
Drops. I really love to outdrop my opponent. And I think this is part of my, like, my tendency to counterplay people. I love outdropping my opponents. That being said, I feel like the way I build lists is typically 50-50 whether I outdrop them, honestly. I don't really consider it during list building, except that I don't want to go too elite. I never want to go too elite. My play style being more responsive, focused, responsive to how my opponent's playing, asking the right questions. I usually don't want to go below 14 if I can help it at all. I think I played an ogre list with 14 drops for a long time. I think mine right now is sitting around 15. I do feel like I get stuck when I'm playing against an opponent that has a lot of trash drops at the beginning of a game, and I'm having to commit earlier than I want to where I'm going to be on the board. Be it scenario for, I mean, primarily for scenario purposes. To me, 14, 15 is like a, 14 is a pretty healthy place to be. Yeah, that to me feels good. It's not something I focus hard on when I'm building lists, but it's definitely consideration.
How many scoring units are you looking for? And do you use individuals? I'm going to guess ogres probably don't have any individuals, but.
Nope. And I think looking at other people I respect building lists recently, I've seen a lot of super low individual lists. One of the guys I play with loves individuals, and I think he focuses a lot on killing people.
Would that be Jesse, or is it somebody different?
Jordan Braun. Jesse pretends like he's going to change lists and then ends up playing Abyssals. But Jordan truly changes lists probably every tournament. And I armies every tournament, not just lists, armies. And I think there's a couple of armies that can do strong individuals well. If you're going combat individuals, you look at like Riftforge, you can get the triplets and their special character, and you can blow a unit up. But those guys aren't going to score at the end of the game. I've started to see the people I really respect list building avoiding more individuals and leaning more towards scoring heroes. I mean, the flexibility at the end of the game is hard to quantify when you're list building, but there's a lot to it. Even if it's kind of a basic five attack large infantry hero, if they synergize with your list, and then if at the end of the game they're really going to make a difference scoring, you know, it is a scenario based game.
Talk to me about unit strength.
Unit strength. 22 is probably the bottom of the barrel. And I like to sit around 24, 25. I mean, it's also everything, right? This is a scenario-based game. You've got to be able to ask and answer questions, but I am convinced with exceptional play, you can win with, you can win and not kill a lot. There are ways to do it. And while I think you need to be able to ask questions and answer questions, like unit strength matters. And it matters. It is huge in this game. You know, we look at ogres, they got unit strength two regiments that might be 14, 16 if I'm double rallied. They're going to be hard to remove. Even 12, 14 is a great stat line for a regiment. I like to take scoring drops. I really do. I like to take scoring drops. And I think unit strength, if you can keep your unit strength around, it is the difference in winning or losing a game.
It's interesting you bring that up because, you know, the thing that we're always talking about is, you know, unit strength is not all created equal. There's a durability factor there, yeah. Whether that's defense or if it's rallied. So talk a little about that because, you know, some people might say, you know, I can get by with a little less unit strength if it's durable and if it's going to survive versus needing, you know, 40 if you're taking all scarecrows.
Yeah, yeah. We just had a list. He had all scarecrow drops.
But what was the unit strength? Was it 64?
Oh, my gosh. It was something like that.
There was nothing else in the list besides scarecrows, right?
And that literally his entire deployment zone was filled. And I asked the question to a couple of our guys, is there a list I could build that I couldn't deploy? And how would we handle that? It was really fun. It was Ghostbusters slime, the slime from Ghostbusters themed.
Ghostbusters 2, I think, too, right? Like the pink slime from the sewer?
Yep, the pink slime. Yeah. And honestly, like I don't want to paint. I think it was full mono count. I don't want to paint 3,000 pink slimes. But I also asked myself, like, what can I do with that list? Like, there's something to be said about having 64 unit strength and being able to just block people out of deployment zones. You've got a fearless army. You're moving up no matter what. They're slow, but like you can load up scoring positions and make it really hard for, I think there's options there. Yeah. What was the original? I forgot the original question.
No, we were just talking about the durability of unit strength, right? Because not all unit strength is created equal.
It's true. Not all is created equal. And I think I'm going to pull it back to play again and just say like how you treat your unit strength during the game matters too. So you've got to think about how you play with units that score. And some of it is, you know, there's some level of it that if you're going to get charged, you're going to get charged. And maybe you need some more chaff. Maybe you need to be better at protecting your units from shooting. You got to keep people from removing your unit strength from the board. But I also am not aiming to take a bunch of defense through unit strength as the core scoring units for my army.
This is going to sound weird, but what about height? Do you think about, I mean, obviously ogres, you know, a lot of it's height 3, but like, are you considering the height so you can see over things or when you're building lists?
I'm looking at the new Dam Busters today, actually, whichever the River Guard Dam Busters, the kind of large infantry and they're height 4. And I was like, ooh, really, really interesting. And realistically, we're talking, when we talk about height, we're really talking 2, 3, or 4. There's not a lot of 5. There's some 5. And then 6, we're talking about giants and titans. But so 2, 3, or 4. And when you get to 4, you're looking over hills. There's something in there. And if you're fast, you get to use hills to ask questions. You know, if you're shorter than the hill or taller than the hill, you get to use hills to ask questions. You sit on the other side of the hill and wait for somebody else to get up on it or make themselves visible. And all of a sudden, you're looking at the fact that Alpha Strike doesn't matter. You know, if I'm playing Order of the Green Lady and I'm up against a hill but not over it, they're either going to have to get on the hill or they can't charge me. They can't see me over the hill. I'm playing ogres or anything height 2. And so I think we look at height 4 units like River Guard Dam Busters, and it's kind of the opposite thing. Like, they've got the distance. They're you know, the speed 7. They're flying, so they can reach a little bit, and then they can see over hills. So that combo is pretty nice.
Do you have a preference in terms of regiments versus hordes? I mean, or you like them both equally? Right situation.
I mean, we're talking about ogres, like 3 regiments of warriors because they unlock, and then we're looking at hordes after that. I think unlocking is a huge deal. And being efficient with your unlocks is one of the most important things I would say a new or early player can learn, or even kind of mid game, right? You're a couple years in, like learning how to be efficient with your unlocks is huge. And so we talk about ogres. It's in my opinion, it's really obvious. Talk about like an infantry army or a cav army. I'm a big fan of regiments. If we're talking cav or infantry or heavy infantry, I'm leaning to one horde. Maybe I think hordes are pretty easy to manipulate for an opponent on the board, and harder to play with. They're just big. They're just wide, and having that amount of width makes it challenging to get where you want to go, and it makes it challenging to keep opponents off of you. So if you're going to do it, you got to plan for it. So I think when we look at more infantry focused or regular cav focused armies, I'm leaning towards maybe a horde, maybe 2, unless you're talking about goblins, right? Goblins are a different story. They kind of break the mold, but I'm not leaning into a lot of hordes. They're just hard. They're hard to move, hard to maneuver. Regiments are nice and compact.
Let's talk chaff.
Chaff. Pretty minimal in my Ogre Army. And again, I think I use chaff to deliver, but I focus on using chaff to ask questions also. Warrior regiments has got to be some of the beefiest chaff you can get. Events 5, 12, 14. I try to not overextend unless I need to. And when I say I need to, it's if I reach out and hold you up for a turn, it's going to block up most of your army or a good portion of your army where it allows me to get in the next position I want to, that I'll do it. If I'm probably going to get charged, I'm using chaff to set up. I'm not hoping my chaff stands. It'd be great if they did. And I have to plan for both. So from a list building perspective, I take a little bit of chaff. You always have to be able to say, hey, I'm going to reach out and lock you up for a turn so I can get where I want to go. You're going to be slow to commit. You're going to put one of my chaff pieces into charge range, but maybe you didn't position great. I'm going to lock you up for a turn. Or to protect things that need to deliver, right? And with that, you got to be careful how you play, because if you get a wavered chaff unit in front of you, you're kind of sitting. The last thing I'll say on chaff, Rob, and I think this is this may be like me and my buddies. I think a lot of people play this way, but me and my buddies talk about it like quite a bit. Everything is chaff, and so you get towards the end of a game. Or you get middle of a game, and I'm mid game. I'm sacrificing warlocks if I need to. If we talk about ogres, like I'm putting a warlock into something if I need to. I'm putting Nom into something. If it's a dragon, I'm putting Nom in with 5 attacks just so I can ground it. And knowing that, honestly, it may take 2 turns for him to get through it. Or if it's a horde that I need to hold up for a turn, everything is chaff. And so I think you do need to have a couple dedicated pieces from a list building standpoint. They need to have some function outside of just chaff. You need to have a plan for scoring with them, or, you need to have a plan for them apart from just dying. But I definitively do not go overboard on chaff.
You think about anti-chaff?
That's what lightning bolt's for, Rob.
Well, I figured you were going to say that. But if you played more than ogres, maybe yeah. You'd have to do something else, yeah. Right?
And I'll say this is where that like, touch of mixed arms comes in. If we talk about mixed arms, it's like just having enough to reach out and say, maybe I can't remove every chaff piece. Maybe I can waver a chaff piece. Maybe I can remove a chaff piece. Maybe I can put a couple wounds before I get to combat. I think having that mixed arm approach allows for a little bit of anti-chaff. Just so you can reach out, right? Just so you can reach out. Probably the last thing I'll say on chaff is like, y'all, as same way you need to be patient with the rest of your army, you got to be patient with your chaff when you're playing too. Don't rush them in. They've got a lot of uses besides getting killed. Learning how to use them, and this is where you maybe try to bake in some chaff that's not just meant to die, but they can have a lot of uses besides just getting killed. If you got flying chaff, maybe they'll make it to the back line. Like, we look at halflings, like, I'd love some EJ Grenadiers to be charging an individual in the back line. There's options.
What about inspiration?
I do think about it, outside of ogres, I think about ogres as like kind of an auto, because all you're trying to do in ogres is unlock as many characters as you can. And that's not 100% true. You're trying to effectively unlock characters because they're strong. You got to have it. I mean, that moment you overextend yourself and your inspiration's not nearby in a game and a unit pops because they spiked a nerve roll on a 10 once. That's when you realize I've got to be better with my chaff, or maybe I need more, or sorry, inspiration. I need more inspiration, or I need to be better at playing with it. So you have one, maybe two pieces of inspiration per battle group. If you're kind of thinking about that battle group idea, it either needs to be you have redundant sources of it, or they need to be highly protectable or really durable. You got to know that they're going to stick around. You're running dwarves and you're chilling. One side of your battle line's got whatever the priests are in dwarves, stone priests or whatever in dwarves. You got to make sure it stays where nothing's going to shoot it, right? Because it's got 11, 13 or 10, 12 nerve. and it'll get taken off the board if you're not careful. And then everything is more susceptible. I'm a 3 to 4 characters with inspiration kind of person. I like to have it. And you got to make sure it's efficient. Like, you got to make sure it's got more purpose than just inspiration, because otherwise you are sinking 50 points into a character that frankly is not going to do anything.
Let's talk magical artifacts. Are they things that you know certain units got to have it, or you're more of a guy that waits to the end and see what you have left? I mean, just how do you think about magical artifacts as you're building a list?
I think it really depends on the list. I think some armies don't need them. Like, we look at EOD, and EOD just doesn't need a lot of magical artifacts. We look at dwarves. Dwarves don't need a lot. Ogres, we talk about creating more resilient units. Siegebreakers need them. They need waiver mitigation. Ogres does not have a way to mitigate waivers via Headstrong or Fury. None of those auras exist in Ogres. And so I just try to be, again, just try to be efficient with my magical artifacts. I never go overboard. I think unit strength is more important than artifacts. I do typically get to a point in list building where I'm almost full of the units I want before I start thinking about where magical artifacts should fit in. I played against somebody who had a unit that hit on threes, and they gave him Brutish Sharpness. It was a horde, and they had like 30 attacks. And I was like, they came into me hindered. I think it was Tribesmen. They are hitting on twos because they have Brutish Sharpness. We look at Brutish Sharpness. That on 18 attacks, probably not worth it. On a large infantry horde, probably not worth it. We get into 24 or 30 attack units, it becomes pretty efficient for its points. I tend to think about magical artifacts through efficiency, from an efficiency standpoint or a utility standpoint. If we're looking at EJ Periscope, pretty good when you're combining it with Celestial Restoration. You got a Dwarf Army. Played against that a few weekends ago. A Dwarf Army with a little... one of the priests had EJ Periscope and Celestial Restoration. So from wherever he was at, safe. He was safe from getting shot. And then he could just drop Celestial Resto anywhere he wanted. Magical artifacts for me are all about efficiency. You don't go overboard. I think some units really need them. Or some units, they feel like an auto-include. Some are kind of in the middle, and then some are like, man, like, you got to think about what the purpose of that unit is. If you're, you know, I would not add Brew of Strength to an 18 attack unit.
You have enough attacks. You'll get enough through. What about spells? I mean, when you're building a list, are you thinking like, I need spells from an offensive purpose, or I'm looking at more of the wound mitigations, you know, or healing? Just talk to me about, you know, hex. Like, what are you trying to incorporate? How do you incorporate spells in your list building?
I think spells for me are primarily reach out and touch. That idea of reaching out and touching chaff, or reaching out and touching a character. We really do like to have a little bit of healing. Now, that healing itself can be accomplished through a lot of different ways. Life Leech, Regeneration, Iron Resolve, like, healing spans the gamut in the ways you can get healing. But the same way it's important to be able to reach out and add a couple pips of damage, it's also really important to be able to remove a couple just kind of casually. And so it's the difference in a unit being in 2 turns of combat or 3 turns of combat, right? That is the difference. It's just could be a couple pips of damage. You know, I think most spells, as I'm thinking through the spell list, it's really like damage or healing. I like Hex. I think it's really cool. And like, I'm probably going to be running Kuzlo, and I think it's just fun to be able to Hex people. But I've also played through Hex before. Hex can be crippling for some armies. I don't know what Hex costs as a base, but if you were to add the whatever the item is that allows you to Hex people.
Yeah, the 50 point for the Trickster's Wand, or usually they're like 10 to 15 points to add Hex to a wizard.
I think when you're adding it to a wizard, my question is like, what are you sacrificing? But I think Trickster's Wand's pretty nice. I think it's a taste preference. Like, I don't care if people like my Warlocks. I have two or three other ones. But if we're looking at like a Surge army, you're playing Forces of Nature, they got one Gladestalker Druid that they're planning on using for the majority of their Surge, and they got Wiltfather. And I'm like, well, I can Hex their Druid, and then they have to use Wiltfather to Surge. Like, that feels pretty good. I think it's more matchup based, but I think it's good. I like Hex a lot. Yeah, like I said, I like to sprinkle in a little bit of healing, and I like to be able to reach out and touch people with spells. Lightning Bolt's just kind of broken, let's be honest.
let's talk command orders. This is a new thing in Clash of Kings 2025. And, you know, give me your sense. What were you thinking when you heard command orders? And now that you've read the book and you're thinking about them, has your feelings changed? You got, what are you thinking about command orders?
I was skeptical, but not doom and gloom when it started, right? When we heard about them, it felt a little bolted on. But I can also acknowledge that as a company, Mantic's looking at fourth edition, and this is their last hurrah of testing out what could we incorporate into fourth. They've got command orders in all their other games. I think it makes sense. Some of the ones that were leaked feel like they give tactical flexibility, which I'm here for. I'm all about tactical flexibility. I was skeptical, but also, like, realistically, I don't know till we see it. And not even just see it, but play it. We actually, what's great is we got a little taste of it at Alamo. It was about a week and a half ago. Alamo happened, so people had the books, right? But we hadn't had the companion update yet. In the last two scenarios of Alamo, incorporated some commands with command dice, so we got a little test. I really liked them. I think it can create some decision fatigue, but I think that will go away with time. Some of the feeling like there's too much to process, I think it'll go away in time as we get more used to them. But I think early on, games are going to take 10 to 15 more minutes. And I think that's a problem. I hope that kind of levels out as we go. But this idea of, like, having another resource to manage is a little tough in a game that is typically pretty tight on time anyway. But how they function, I think they're awesome. I think they're so fun. The movement ones are fun. You're basically getting a free Blade of Slashing for one command point, getting a free Mace of Crushing for one command point. You spike and you get to reroll all your dice if you want. I've talked in the Countercharge Discord quite a bit with Matt Carmack about, like, when things happen. He's clarified that for us. That needs to be crystal clear because I think a lot of people are going to be confused on when you declare a command. But I think in general, they're fun. They're a lot of fun. They provide some tactical flexibility, provide a little bit more surety. Yeah, an example from Alamo a couple weekends ago, I had a regiment unit that I kind of poorly positioned in front of a Siegebreaker horde. Regiment got charged. It was an Iron Guard regiment because I couldn't see them from behind with the Siegebreakers. Iron Guard regiment charges in. Wait, I have command dice. So I sidestep 6 inches and charge in with Siegebreakers. This is great. This just got me out of, like, a nasty situation that I didn't want to be in. I think it creates some flexibility it may be hard to play around. If my opponent had done that, it may have been like, oh, I didn't really like that. But I also think it promotes a little bit more. The movement ones are really fun. I think they're a good thing.
Yeah, command dice are going to be very interesting. I am of the persuasion that command dice are going to be a skill separator. The really good players are going to be able to take those tools and separate even further from the people that don't know how to use them efficiently.
I think what's interesting about them is, like, we really don't know how many you should take. That to me is going to take, I think it's going to take probably 6 months to a year to figure out. Like, when are you taking too many? When are you not taking enough? That's a whole nother part of it.
How do you incorporate speed into your list?
I am dying to play a list with flyers just to figure out if I will be as impatient or impatient as the people I play against. I play against people who are super patient with their flyers or are patient for a turn and then overextend. And I'm analyzing their play on their turn, right? Thinking, like, what would I do with that flyer right there? I will say, I think speed in general and flying or not flying is built into the utility of the unit. So I think when you're adding units in, what you're thinking about is, how is this unit going to be utilized? So while it's nice to have a speed 7, yeah, we'll go back to Trident Realms. Like, I was admiring the Dam Busters today, thinking, like, oh, it'd be fun to have a speed 7 flying unit that's, like, crush 2, 18 attacks, thunder 1, hit on 4s, having a little bit of reach, a little bit of grind. Thinking about that, my mind is not thinking, like, who can I reach out and touch? They're high 4, so we can see over everything. What is the utility of that unit? Speed 7 is just a piece of their utility. So we think about Hunters and Ogres. I played Hunters with Brew of Haste for a long time. So they're basically a large infantry cav speed unit, right? I think if you think about what you can reach out and touch with your speed, you're going to get out of position. And so when you're list building, it's thinking about, okay, how is this game going to be played? How do I want to play the game? And where does this unit fit into it? And so if I'm adding some flyers, I'm thinking about the utility of a speed 10 flying unit. If I'm adding, we look at like the new Silver Breeze Cav, I think they can get ordered march and they're nimble and they're speed 9. And you're thinking about the utility of a speed 9 unit that can pivot, run to a position and pivot back and be in position for the next turn. Or greater air elementals. They got the remove shambling for a turn rule, right? So think about flying up 20, wherever you want to be. And you don't even care if you're in position because the next turn you're going to position and then surge. You're not thinking about reach as much as you're thinking about utility. And, you know, we look at speed 4 units. Dwarves got ordered march, which I think doesn't help them in the charge countercharge game, but it does help a lot in positioning around the board. I haven't played with a lot of speed 5 units. I'll be honest. Like that's the spot where I'm like, you know, I think you're planning on getting charged. All that being said, we're back to like, what is the utility of the unit? What is the unit for in the list? How are you anticipating them being played in the list? And that's really how I treat speed. It's nice to be able to reach out. I like to reach out with my giants if I can. I like to pressure zones with my giants because they can reach out. I do the same thing with a Siegebreaker Horde, though. Like 12 inches is a good amount of reach. And so if you can get on an angle where you're pressuring a zone, that's where range helps. And that's where flyers help a lot, is you can really pressure zones. True to my play style, you can force them to answer the questions like, what are you going to do when I can, how are you going to handle me being able to land in your backfield? What are you planning on doing here? You have to decide. So I think that's where speed comes in.
Well, let's talk deployment. You know, are you thinking about how the army is going to deploy as you're building the list? And, you know, what kind of things are you thinking about? Are you thinking about, you know, concentration of strength or allocation of resources or what unit you're going to drop first? Just walk us through how conscious you are of the deployment of the army as you're building the list.
Unless you're like you've got a lot of trash drops or a lot of same drops, which I played a Night Stalker list at Alamo that had like two of everything. You can put one of something somewhere, but no, you can put the other exact same thing somewhere else. When it comes to how you deploy from a list building perspective, to me, it plays out in practice games. And you start to kind of realize maybe this unit doesn't fit in how I'm playing the game, or like these units belong together, right? And so I do think about that, especially as we look at some of the armies that have really started to integrate more auras and synergies. I often am looking to place those things together. Talk about halflings. I'm like, if I'm going to take a Iron Beast with Pride of the Shires, I'm going to partner them up with some Forest Trolls so they get headstrong, right? Like those are the things I'm thinking about in deployment, is what kind of terrain will these things want to be near, in, away from? Kind of who are they going to hang out with? You know, I talked about earlier, maybe I don't do battle groups as much, but you know, I usually do kind of have some looser battle groups. Those are based around who are they going to deploy near? Like, what can they reach turn one? Maybe that's another question I like to ask in list building and deployment. Like, where can these guys go? Look at giants. I'm like, I can get some reach out of a giant turn one, not down the middle of the board, down a flank, and require my opponent to answer some questions.
All right. Well, let's talk terrain. You know, there's an old adage, either got to be fast enough to get around it or be able to mitigate going through it. Talk to me about how you think about terrain as you're building your list.
I'm going
to
add a third to this adage and say, you got to be good at getting charged through it. I don't particularly like charging into terrain, even if I'm hitting on threes. I don't use a ton of terrain mitigation. I feel like I've learned to play around terrain for the most part, or I accommodate terrain during deployment. Typically, if I'm being perfectly honest, I did play against a halfing list that had a little strider aura guy and two units of juggers, and the flexibility it gives to just kind of go wherever you want to go with your deployment is super nice. Ogres just don't have a lot of options. Honestly, I'm not taking boots, Jesse's boots of striding on Siegebreaker unit. Like, so I've learned to play where I'm going to force other units to get hindered charging me. That's kind of how I've learned to play. I think if we look at other lists, it's we look at how much flexibility do you have during deployment? Can you deploy behind a forest and you have Pathfinder, so it doesn't matter? And you can move full speed? Or can you park yourself in a forest, but you've got Strider? So it's like, you know, or you've got a forest in the middle of the board and it's like, yeah, I'll put my juggers lined up with this forest or clipping it. I don't care if they run through it because I can move my Strider aura in place. In some lists, it makes a lot of sense. It's not something I go like way out of the way to add ogres. There's just not a lot of options for adding it. And so I've learned to play around it. And I think that will be, as I look to future armies, I think it's going to be a big boon, is knowing how to not rely on terrain mitigation if it just doesn't make sense in the list. But I think there are some places where it adds a lot of, again, a lot of flexibility in how you play if you can incorporate some terrain mitigation.
Let's talk scenarios. We already had a bunch of scenarios. We've got a bunch of new ones. Ogres play scenarios very well. But I mean, when you're building a list, I would assume you've got to be taking into account the various types of scenarios. And, you know, at the end of the day, the question is, how are you going to play that scenario?
With whatever list you build, you've got to have a plan for scenarios. I kind of group the scenarios into like spread out scenarios or not spread out scenarios, if I'm being honest. And I think some lists can handle spread out scenarios really, really well. And some lists can't. Kings is a pretty balanced game. Like, even with an army that doesn't love to spread out, I've learned to play 2/3 of a scenario board. We talk about hold the line. I consistently play 2/3 of the board. We played Rack and Ruin recently.
Yeah, talking about a scenario that wants to spread you out, right?
Yeah. It's an objective token in the middle that only counts at the end of the board. And then 2 progressive scoring objectives on either side of the board. I think you can play a list that can capture all of them. I also think you can play any list pretty well into any scenario until you get into some of the funky Texas scenarios, as long as you don't try to overreach. Like, have a plan and commit to it and don't overreach. If you're an army that doesn't spread out, do not spread out. Play 2/3 of the hold the line board. Rack and Ruin, where you've got 2 progressive scorings on opposite side of the board, plan on winning 1 and then plan to commit to the middle at the end. And I think this is where it's kind of nice to have a few pieces that can just like kind of go grab a scenario piece. If we're talking about Rack and Ruin, maybe they grab a scenario piece early. You got a small flying chaff unit or a unit that can just sit in the back corner of a board and hold an objective for the whole game. I've got a 65-point goblin regiment or whatever, however much they cost, they can just park. It's nice to have those pieces built in. So you don't want everything necessarily to be super, super elite. Some armies lean towards it. There's not a lot you can do. But I think in a lot of armies, it's nice to build in the scenario flexibility where you can make the choice if you want to. Hey, I have a game plan. I'll park a 65, 70-point unit on a scenario piece because I know how my army plays without it. And I brought that piece to either be chaff or act as a scenario holding unit. So scenarios are king. Scenarios are everything. You have to plan how you're going to play them during list building as well.
Talk to me about scoring systems. So if you know you're playing Blackjack or Northern Kings, I mean, how does that affect your list building?
You can lean in slight skew and go 4-1 and win a tournament because you can blow 4 opponents out, play 4 a draw in your last game if you want to. It is a way to play competitively. I tend to prefer to play all comers. That's the way I tend to prefer to play, but it's totally an option. I mean, look at even the Australian Masters just happened. Like, the Master lost his last game. So he obviously blew out 4 opponents if he lost his last game and still took it home.
Well, it's Jeffrey Trace too, right? So he's a living legend, especially down under.
You can build your list to play close. You can build your list to blow opponents out, but get blown out by some opponents. I'd say it probably is more of a personal preference than anything. I rarely table people in the way I build lists and the way I play. It's usually down to the end.
When you're building lists, are you thinking about having to play on a clock?
I hate clocks. I mean, I love clocks, because I think they're the only way to keep tournaments going. And I will play for hours and hours if we don't have one. But man, I am a slow player. And I will play for as long as you let me. I think it's probably more about reps than anything. Except for the fact that you could play a list that has too many decisions to make in a turn. I don't even think too many units. I'm just going to say too many decisions to make in a turn, and that will hurt you on your clock. And I think the question becomes, like, can you simplify it and be as effective? Or can you understand the decisions you want to consistently make through playing and practicing so that, like, when you get to those points, you know what decisions you want to make. I've thought about playing like a, you know, I don't know what, got 25 drop goblin list or whatever crazy goblin drops happen, and wondered like, what would that be like? But realistically, you're making decisions on half those units. You're not making decisions on every unit. I feel like I make decisions on every unit in my ogre army. Typically when I'm playing, I'm trying to position every unit. I'm trying to make decisions on charging or not with every unit. And so it does take, it takes me some time, even with a not a high drop army, like a mid drop army.
When you're building your list, are you conscious of that first turn roll or the turn seven roll? Are you thinking about those things that I want to be first, I want to be second? Or
I don't think about it as much during list building as much. I would say I think about it more per scenario. And, you know, maybe some people think about it per scenario as they're list building. I'm not that smart. I think as you're building a list, you have to ask, like, at what point do I want to ask my opponent questions with my ogres? Like, I like to put a little bit of damage out front, and I really like going first. And so I like to be able to reach out. Sometimes I don't know that I go second very often by choice. I'd be eager to hear some statistics on, like, how many people choose to go second, how often that happens that people choose to go second. But if you've got a list that can really redeploy, that has some flexibility in redeploying or taking some time, it's okay to go second. Or if you have a list that's going to have some staying power and you know that you're going to want that turn bottom of the scenario turn movement to get to where you want to go, then I think it's, you got to think about that.
Some people just say they just assume they're going to go second, or they're assuming they're going to, and depending on the scenario, they're just going to assume they're going to lose the role and not get the choice that they want. And so they're consciously making sure they're able to play when they don't get the role. How does the Clash of Kings update that happens every year affect your list building process? I mean, does it, like, put you on pause? Does it invigorate you? Just tell me what you feel when this thing comes out every year.
I think it's a lot of fun. I think it's exciting. Yeah, that's my opinion is, it's just fun. And even we talk about ogres, Siegebreakers just got dumpstered. It was a huge nerf to Siegebreakers. How that plays out and how good the ogre list is still, like we talked about earlier, very much up for debate. I still think it's a really good list. There's command dice help a lot with that. But it's just so exciting to see new opportunities every year, see stuff getting shifted around. I like the cadence of the Clash of Kings a lot. It's a little bit awkward timing from a U.S. Masters perspective, because it's kind of like right in the middle of the season for Texas. We have a winter GT and a spring GT, and that's it. But then we have like three or four GTs in the fall, and it kind of falls right in the middle of them. So it's a little bit awkward from a GT perspective. But from a list building perspective, I think it's just, it feels like it's just fuel to the fire. It feels like this, like, moment of new discovery. What changed? You know, what new synergies exist? We're getting a lot of chatter in our personal Discord chat about Abyssals right now. Jesse's kicking around new lists that are, like, completely different.
Here's a crazy question for you, though. What is the most overlooked thing that impacts successful list building?
That is a crazy question. Ooh, wow. Rob, I'm not sure I know how to answer that.
Maybe you and Jesse are so smart, you don't overlook anything. That, you know, you don't have the answer because you don't overlook anything, right?
You know, we talk about the questions you're gonna be asked, right? Maybe we don't even talk about the questions that you're gonna ask, and we just talk about the questions that you're gonna be asked. And I think, do you have answers to 40 to 60 shots a turn? Either in how you play, but also it's got to be accommodated for in your list building. Do you have answers to defense six? I ran into a dwarf army the last round of Alamo that was all defense six except for the Shieldbreakers. It was a wall of 15, 17 nerve defense six, and you got to have a way to remove them. I think I mentioned earlier, I think you can play around opponent's speed I think you can. I think good play can play around opponent's speed. Not always, but it's doable. Maybe to summarize, maybe the most overlooked thing is like, what are you trying to do? What are you trying to do? How do you like to play?
Yeah.
Have you played enough to know how you like to play? If not, that's okay. What do you like to do? What kind of questions do you want to ask? What kind of list do you want to play? Let's not add random stuff in there. Let's make sure everything's got a purpose. I think those are some really, those are some good things.
You're reading my mind, because my next question was, what's the most important question that a new player should be asking during list building? And it's a lot of those things you just said. I mean, at a basic level is, how are you going to win with the army?
I think about Magic the Gathering a lot. I never played like an extravagant amount of Magic, but I picked it up during COVID for the first time in my life. And I realized I liked playing counter lists. And so I feel like there's probably a not, I would imagine a lot of Kings players have probably played Magic at some point. Not everybody, but if you're getting into Kings, you're probably a little bit of a nerd already. You've maybe tinkered around with Magic. And you think about this, like, I don't remember what the three archetypes are for Magic, but I do know counter being one. And I just like distinctly remember playing as counter lists and being like, I love this idea of having answers to my opponent's questions. There's probably indicators. I think you have more fun and you do better when it's your style. Honestly, it takes time to figure it out, but it's true.
How has your list building process evolved over time?
You know, I feel like over time, it's easier to see what things do. It's easier to, as you've played against units, as you've played with units, it's easier to start to understand where they fit in the game and kind of what their purpose is. Do they line up with what should kind of be a baseline for this role? A hammer role. Will a hammer break a defense 5, 15, 17 unit? That's a good question to qualify a hammer. And so when you start list building and you start thinking about, what questions do I want to ask? How do I want to play the game? What questions do I need to answer? Being able to look at units, and not just units standalone, but how they interact, and get a feel for where they fit in your play style or just on the table while you're playing, where they fit in your battle line. Those are things that have become a lot more natural in list building for me. You know, we talk about Jordan Braun, like he tries to break lists. I actually talked with Dustin Howard about this. Just this idea of trying to constantly break a list, like constantly just moving to different lists to just try to find something that you can crack open. And we have some people in Texas that do that. It's fine. I mean, I've played like virtually the same list for 3 years. I think Kings is balanced enough that if you know what you're trying to do, what your units can and can't do, which is something that comes with experience in list building, then you can start to answer questions for people, even for people that are trying to break open lists, and you start seeing those things, right? And I think the last thing is like knowing how your units interact together, right? I may have said that earlier, but we look at auras, it's like auras and rally, and like, what do those battle groups start looking like? How do you want those things to roll together on the table? Those are things that come, I think, with some experience, seeing units played, analyzing other players' play, and analyzing your own play deeply, so you can start to understand like some of those things.
Now it's that time of the show where we get into a specific list where you showcase all those fundamentals that you just went over with us and explain to us why this list is the best list. But first, kick us off with, what's the background on this list that you're going to share?
I think the background is ogres changed a lot in Clash. The functionality of the Ogre Warlock rule, where they get additional spell dice for being within 6 inches of a horde regiment, large infantry unit, has changed a lot.
Now they got to be a merc, right? So pretty much everything besides chariots and siegebreakers.
Yep. So yeah, this is a big change. This is like a major shakeup to the 3 Siegebreaker, 3 Warlock, Nomagrok, fill in what you want after that. And I think also the command orders have changed the list a little bit. Command orders, the sergeant has the paymaster upgrade now. You know, everything else is pretty much the same, really. the sergeant got a buff with the paymaster upgrade as being as an available purchase, and then Siegebreakers took a hit. Speed and how they interact with warlocks.
Well, if you want to kick us off, you know, just go through the list, go through it unit by unit. Give us the specific role for each of the units, and maybe speak to our, you know, units that may be designed to work together.
A little bit of a flashback to my very first tournament in 2022. I had the Mammoth. It had just gotten the big deal upgrade the November before. It will give, it's kind of brutal 2 on a stick. So it'll give brutal 2 to any ogre unit within 12 inches. And then Kuzlo is -1 nerve for everything within 6 inches, unfortunately, including friendlies. So that was my very first ogre list to play. Kind of loved it. I love this idea of a brutal 3 bomb where I could come in and, you know, I'm swinging nerve by 3 just to start the combat. And so this list, I have taken 3 regiments of warriors, 3 hordes of warriors. That's kind of the bulk of the infantry. We got a Mammoth with the big deal upgrade. It's got brutal 2 base. I forgot that the Mammoth was brutal 2 base. That's awesome. So yeah, he'll get brutal on a stick. I've got a giant with Slayer in there because the Mammoth's got Rampage. I've got a sergeant with the paymaster upgrade. I went ahead and gave him a crossbow. Again, I'm a big fan of plink damage. He's elite, 5 shots, hits on a 5+, pierce 2, steady aim. And then I've got my 3 warlocks, my battery of 3 warlocks. So they've got drain life and lightning bolt. So the lightning bolt goes up to 6 for those. Drain life goes up to 8, as long as they're within 6 inches of the warrior horde or regiment. Namagrok, who is Namagrok? And then Kuzlo, the stealth bubble, is a notable exclusion. I've had that thing since it came out. I've ran the boomer chariots that have an aura of stealth with the sacred horn the last 2 years since they came out. It's tough because I feel like only in the last 6 months have I learned to play with them as this mixture of chaff stealth bubble, where I feel like I'm getting more out of them than I used to. But honestly, I feel like the trade-off there is I'm trading stealth for rally 2, and it's mercs only. It's really just going to be my hordes and regiments that are going to get rally 2. He's base rally 1. There's a command order for rally 1. 2 rally 1s will stack. So yeah, honestly, this trade-off for me of, from a defensive standpoint, I'm trading off rally 2 on my warriors and regiments for stealth. And I'm just hoping that is enough of an offset. And I'll play some games, and it may not be, and I may bring the stealth back. I think the biggest challenge is going to be dealing with Crush 1 across the board. I've got Bane Chant through Namagrok. I also do have the Mammoth and the Giant. So, but all my regiments and hordes are Crush 1 base. So that's going to be a challenge to deal with that I'm not used to. I also can give Brutal 2 and then have Kuzlo, and then also have the brutal +1 command order tacked on. So I was doing some math earlier, and like crush 2 siege breakers against defense 5 or 6. I don't think I went below that, but 5 or 6, and then having brutal 3, just kind of brutal 3, right? Just maybe the Mammoth and the command order, or the command order and Kuzlo. This idea that I can spread it out a little bit, have the Mammoth in one combat. Kuzlo may or may not affect that. So it's maybe a 3 flip for their nerve. You can spread it out a little bit, which is nice.
Essentially brutal 3 on 3 different units. Mammoth's got 2, the +1 from the Mammoth on another unit, and then the command on a 3rd unit. And if they all get access to Kuzlo, it's essentially 3 at that point.
You got brutal 3 in 3 combats. I think there's something there. And then the flip is we can get brutal 4. I can get brutal 3 and Kuzlo on a unit if I want to. We're talking about 4 nerve swing for a combat, for a key combat, or a 3 swing, 2 to 3 swing across multiple combats. And then I've still got kind of the drain life battery for when we get into combat. I've got the lightning bolt to reach out and touch. I think Kuzlo is just like a crazy good utility piece in general. You do have to be careful because his -1 to nerve affects your own units, but he's got hex, he's got enthrall.
People don't see the enthrall or the hex coming.
In my opinion, Kuzlo is just like a really fun utility piece. He's good. He's got regen. If 5 attacks, vicious. I think crush 2. Yeah, he's just great. And so he can run by himself. He can get involved in all the business in the guts of the combat. He can go where he needs to go. You know, we've lost some defensive capability from moving siege breakers to warriors, but I've also gained 135 points. And so that essentially went, honestly, that went straight into the paymaster. And then from my old list, I swapped a giant for the mammoth with Call of Greatness and put Kuzla in. I'm excited about it. I think it's going to take some skill to pilot on my part and some practice just to make sure I keep Kuzla in the right spot. But can you imagine? I'm just going to voice this to the world. Can you imagine running up on a 120 point defense 5 unit with 14, 16 nerve? That is a brutal regiment to try to break through. And those are going to be the warrior regiments. Like, they're going to be 14, 16. Nightmarish. I already have people bouncing off 12, 14.
How many units is in this list?
It's got 14 drops. I think I said that's kind of like my bottom.
What about unit strength?
24.
How do you think it's going to handle the scenarios?
I love it for scenarios. I've got 5 large infantry characters and then Kuzlo. And both the giant and the mammoth are unit strength 2. So really, it's a game of keeping them alive. Regiments are great at holding objectives or, you know, even carrying loot tokens or whatever. They stick around. I will likely have 1 regiment around at the end of the game. I was playing with 2 before. I've got 3 now. So I'll have at least 1 left at the end of the game. I'll probably have a horde or 2 left. 1 of the 2 Titans will be around, and probably all of my characters, unless I need to sack 1.
Have you started playing this on UB or?
Not yet. I was kicking it around at the last GT I was at. I was kicking it around with some guys, with Dustin Howard, actually, just talking about, like, because he ran a very similar list to me. The Lone Wolf I went to, we played like a mirror match where we both had the Kuzlo Mammoth bomb of -3 nerve. And I was like, with this brutal +1 upgrade, like, that's a huge swing. He's like, if you don't take it to Lone Wolf, I'm going to. I was like, I think I'm going to take it to Lone Wolf.
In terms of matchups, are you thinking there's, you know, is this going to be like playing into the future meta, you think?
Honestly, Rob, I'm terrible at meta analysis. I try to get really good at what I play and play it. And I do try to squeeze what I can out of my lists. I would say my biggest thing is just getting good at playing the game. I don't mean with any specific list. I just mean getting good at angles, getting good at scenario, learning how to deny people what they are trying to do, learning how to get what you want out of people. I try to build efficient, effective lists. I have to be able to answer a few questions. I like building all comers lists that I can kind of take and say, I'm going to prove how good I am at this game, not how good your list is compared to mine.
You know, all those things are true about what a new player needs to learn, right? To really become a good player. What is the best army for people to use?
Ogres are simple in that way, right? There's not too many things you're trying to coordinate from a army integration standpoint. There'll be a little bit more now that I've added some pieces, but I do think ogres are a good option. They're pretty resilient. And so you've got that going for you, or you've got some forgiveness built in. I do think they can go deep. Man, I think about Ratkin a lot, and I'm like, they've got good mixed arms approach. Like, shock troops are really solid. You've got options in Ratkin. You've got scud flies. You can kind of, there's a lot of different things you can touch. Mid-range shooting, some long-range shooting. They can build a good all-comers list. They can also shoot people out of the water. I also kind of like Night Stalkers for newer players. I mean this in the best way. They can be really straightforward. And you can still get some flexibility and some tactics in there. And, like, they make a good intro list. Butchers are sturdy. And they got awesome Titans. And you've got a little bit of flying. You don't even have to deal with inspiring. Like, I like Night Stalkers for an intro list for people. I think you can do well with, like, just a solid list, not even an exceptional list, just a decent list. You can do well with them.
So are you planning to run this list at an event coming up? What do you got plans for this?
Yeah, so we've got 3 more Texas events in the season for us. So Mark Cox is running one at his house. It's a doubles tournament. I'm not going this year, unfortunately, so I'm going to miss that one. I'm going to try to make Bayou Battles, which is in Houston, in late January, but it's 1995. But then this list will probably go to Lone Wolf.
Well, we got one more thing to do before we get out of here, Justin, and I'm sure you've listened to these episodes. We got this rapid fire 10 questions. Are you ready?
Let's go.
All right, let's do it. What's your favorite army?
Ogres.
What is your least favorite scenario?
Salt the Earth.
What drives you creatively or competitively?
Competitively.
When your opponent rolls snake eyes?
I just feel bad for him.
When you roll snake eyes?
I want to die on the inside.
What is your favorite hobby material?
Oh, my airbrush.
What is your biggest gaming pet peeve?
Sloppy players.
If you had to replace miniature wargaming with another hobby, what would it be?
Oh, no. Probably board games.
What other miniature wargame would you not want to play?
40K.
If you had a romantic evening with Ronnie Renton, what would you whisper sweetly to him?
Oh, my God. Quit buffing dwarves.
It's good advice. It's good advice. Well, Justin, I appreciate you coming on the show. You know, it's always good to get different perspectives on list building. There's a lot of common things we all share, but every once in a while you get a nugget that's something just a little bit different. It gives people a different perspective. So we appreciate you coming on. And before we get out of here, where can people follow you, Justin? I know you're on Facebook. I mean, and you're on the Countercharge Discord.
Honestly, the Countercharge Discord is by far my most active. Dark Smackle.
Yep.
I'm pretty regular in the Kings of War page. Otherwise, I'll catch you in Reno at Masters, hopefully.
For those that are listening, even if you're not going to make the Masters, come on out for Best of the Rest. We'd love to see you out there. That's going to do us tonight. And until next time, keep countercharging.
Thanks for listening. And we'll see you next time on Countercharge. Please let us know what you thought of the show by emailing us at counterchargepodcast@gmail.com, on Twitter at countercharge15, or by commenting on the Countercharge Kings of War podcast Facebook group. If you enjoy the show, you can help others find out about it by leaving positive reviews on iTunes. Until next time, keep countercharging. Music is a composition of Kevin MacLeod and is licensed under Creative Commons.